The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And here we go. I'm Digital Adele, back with Hoops Profile with our new rookies only segment. We're going to be talking the Atlanta Hawks and their crop of rookies this year. We're doing our channel a little bit differently. We're going to be having on a guest or two throughout the season. We're going to try to get this done so that this video is out on Wednesdays and Fridays for you all. In addition to the college basketball draft profile breakdowns that we're also going to discuss throughout the college season. Until then, we're going to be talking NBA draft prospects with our special guest, Matt Hanifan.
What's going on? What's going on? Thank you for having me. I'm proud to be here. Pleasure to be here. I'm ready to talk some Hawks prospects.
Absolutely. We're super excited to have you here on the program. Can you tell people where we can find some of your work before we begin?
I'm all over the place doing a lot of stuff for a lot of different people. If you want to find all of it, Twitter handle is at MPH_824_. I write for HaHaHoops.com, a Miami Heat blog site, Vendetta Sports Media, a sports media blog site, Mountain West Connection, where I do cover the Mountain West basketball scene. So if you like the Mountain West, if you like the men's basketball scene, when college basketball season does come around, you'll find all my stuff there. So I'm doing a lot of different things, man. A lot of different things, diversifying different areas. But yeah, man, let's get into it.
Awesome. Yeah, you'd love to see it. And one thing you know about Matt Hanifan, if he's going to be giving you an opinion, it's going to be backed by his Nevada bias.
Yep, my beloved Nevada Wolf.
That's exactly right. So we're going to get into it. The team we're going to be talking about today is going to be the Atlanta Hawks, and a little graphic that is popping up on the screen for you. And we're going to be talking about their draft picks. They've got two draft picks in the NBA draft. Number one overall, controversial pick in my opinion here, it's Zachary Risacher and Nikola Dirosic at number 43 overall. The reason why I say that's controversial is there are some players that were in this draft that I think are going to be all NBA level potential. And one of them just so happens to be a point guard, which the Atlanta Hawks are likely going to be needing, since Trae Young seems to be on the outs with the organization. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with the Atlanta Hawks. But Zachary in particular, we're talking about his summer league debut. He only played two games, and it's a dichotomy of play, right? On one hand, he had a game that was really good, really impressive stats-wise, and then he has another game where he played 30 minutes, produced 7 points, you know, 5 rebounds, and a couple of assists. So, you know, it's just a very interesting I'm very interested to get your thoughts, Matt, on what you think of Zachary Risacher so far.
I was okay. So I've talked to you on air, off air about this plenty. I wasn't incredibly high on the Risacher pick at the time, and I'm still not super high on it now. But just from if I'm throwing the stats aside for a second, there were a couple of things that I was looking for in his summer league film that it pleasantly surprised me. Like one thing that I was critical of pre-draft and post-draft was his handle. Like, I didn't think he had a very clean handle. And when you're going number one overall, like, there's a lot of baggage, whether it's whether the top of the draft is a flat draft, which this draft was, or it's not. There's a lot of baggage that comes with being number one overall pick. And if you're going to take a guy number one overall with a skill, like you, when you don't have much ball skills, and I didn't think he had much ball skills when he was playing in Europe, it's concerning to me. And like, he did definitely improve his 3-point shot his last year when he was there. He shot, I think, like 38%, 39% over like 65 combined games when he was in Europe. Like, the percentages were there specifically from 3-point range. And like, you could tell him defensively, like he showed the length. He was good in that area as a team defender. He looked good as an individual defender, at least from what I saw when he was over there. But one thing that I wanted to just hone in on when I watched these two games of his was his handle. And I was actually pleasantly surprised. Like, I thought he showed good ball skills. Like, there was one of the first plays of his first game of Summer League against Alex Sarr. Like, he was in a pick and roll. He's going to the left. It looks clean. Like, he's not like panicking or anything like that. It's smooth. It's fluid. He rises up with his left hand over him. And then the very next possession, he's in a pick and roll. He's bringing the ball up the floor. He's in a pick and roll. He gets blitzed. And he's, again, calm again. Like, he doesn't panic. He gets off the ball. He relocates to the corner and eventually hits three. Like, it just little stuff like that. And then there were a couple plays throughout the game where he had a behind the back on Justin Champagny, where he threw behind the back pass to the corner. It wasn't a made shot. But, like, again, like, you saw him, I think, throughout Summer League become more confident with his ball skills and his handle. And like, that's something that I wanted to see from him that I was pleasantly surprised, because I didn't know if he would flash that in summer. And so that was one thing specifically that I liked. Again, the shooting wasn't efficient, but I liked just how aggressive he was. And he wasn't like, he had a quick trigger. He wasn't afraid to let it fly. He shot 25% from deep. So, I mean, that's not great, but I was at least encouraged that he was aggressive and confident in that. He didn't go away from that in his two games. And I thought defensively, like, he was solid. Like, there wasn't anything that, like, stood out. But, like, you could just see how big he is and how lengthy he is when he's on the floor. I think something else that I liked from him on the defense, like, specifically on the defensive glass, like, was his out-of-area rebounding. Like, to me, there were times where he was, you know, he was – you didn't see him, and then you saw him, like, either, like, tip a rebound out or something like that. Like, he used his length to – and he's used his athleticism to his advantage in that area, too. And so those are just a few things that stood out to me. What were your thoughts on it? I know it's an abbreviated sample, but
– No, but you actually made a lot of great points. And when you talk about his time over in Europe, early in the season, a lot of your concerns were well-founded. However, over the last couple of months of the season, he really turned it up. Like, he really started getting aggressive. He was taking the ball to the rack. He was, you know, the one thing about him, he plays much better in a system. But when he gets out in the open court at 6'9", he can really move. I think that's what surprises a lot of people, is how well and how fluid he is of a mover. And his handle, even though it needs to get tightened up a little bit, he still does have that behind the back. He's got a little stutter and go to him. He'll cross you up a little bit. His crossover isn't great, but that behind the back for his size is really unique. And his soft touch off the glass, I know exactly the play you're talking about. Where he comes down, he's on the right side of the floor. He drives left with his left hand, and the defender and Sarr are both there. There's two of them, and he's nice soft touch off the glass with his left hand. He's super talented in that way. His shooting, I mean, he was 7 for 16 from the field in that game against Portland, the Trailblazers, and he's always going to give you the rebounds. As you mentioned, the out-of-area rebounds are there. Even in the game where he played 30 minutes and only scored 7 points, he had 5 rebounds because he's active. And as you mentioned, he gets a hand on the ball, he'll get a tip. Now, I'm less enthusiastic about his individual point of attack defense than you are. I thought there's some major flaws there. Like, he's going to get abused on the perimeter to start, but he's very smart, right? So, like, during Summer League, where the guys aren't as skilled across the board as he's going to be, he gives ground and uses that length to get a hand up. a lot like how I view Nico, you know, for the Miami Heat, for example, just to give you a point of reference since you're a Heat fan. Nico seemed to improve defensively for the Miami Heat, but a lot of that is him using his length and knowing the angles more than him being able to lock somebody up and just stay in front of them, for example. So for Zachary, I think he'll improve at that, but I think he's going to really struggle early in the season with guarding some of the high pedigree talent on the wings. Now, the other thing about him and his shooting, he can really shoot the ball when he gets his feet set. But he has a fundamental flaw in his shot that he needs to correct. Over-rotates to the right. Like, he loves going to his right and then shooting over. His whole body rotates. And that gets him in trouble, and that's why you saw some of the low percentages in Summer League, because it's a deeper three in the NBA than you get abroad. So it's going to be an adjustment for him. He can clean that up. It's a little thing. But I do really like him as a prospect. I think he's better than people anticipated for themselves. But he's just about as advertised. But I think there are a couple of prospects that were picked below him that I think are going to end up being ultimately better than him. But he's a solid pick. But when he's the number one overall pick, looking more than for just a solid guy, you're looking for a franchise difference maker. Now,
that's something that I have questions about just as a rookie. Like, I wish I was in the room with Quinn Snyder talking about like what their plans are for him. But again, when you're the number one overall pick, there's a lot of baggage that comes with that. So like my question with him in this context with Trae Young, with Bogdan Bogdanovic, with some of these other guys, like how much are you going to put on his plate and like how are you going to not just run stuff, not really run stuff through him, but for him? Like, are you going to, like, how many pin downs is he going to get? Like, what type of actions are you going to run for him to set him up? Are you going to run any actions for him? Are you going to keep it in like a limited bind and then continue to add on as the years go on? Like, because he's still only 19 years old. Like, he's still a young kid. But like, how much are you going to put on him as a rookie in this, because again, like, the Hawks aren't a team. They're not like the Wizards, or they're not like they're not like the Trailblazers. You know what I mean? Like, but they're also not one of these upper echelon teams in their respective conference. Like, they're a perpetual play-in team. Like, they've been perpetually mediocre for like 3 or 4 years now, ever since they made the Eastern Conference Finals. So what are they gonna do for him as a rookie to put him in the best position to not only succeed but develop as he goes into his second year, third year, fourth year? Like, what? That's my biggest question, because like, I don't think they developed DeAndre Hunter very well. He was another wing, like highly touted wing. What exactly are they going to do to put him in position to succeed with this limited skill set as a rookie? And how are they going to continue to progress with that? That's just the question that I have.
So you read my mind. What they did with DeAndre Hunter to me is criminal. Like, I can't believe the lack of development out of that kid. And I can see a lot of that. But here's the thing about Zachary that I really like, is that he plays well. So when you have Trae Young, while he's there, he back cuts really well. He makes timely cuts. He's able to fit in really well on that team. The problem I have is the vision, right? Because if you're trying to get rid of Trae Young, you're going to stunt his growth. Because now he's not going to have that ball handler, point guard, being able to make things happen. Because if you ask him to be the main offensive initiator and ball handler, it's not going to go well for him. His handle isn't like that yet. So I would say he's going to play better with a Trae Young, and he's going to develop quicker with a Trae Young than he will without him. Now, again, that assumes Trae respects him enough to facilitate and want to get him involved and not jack 45 footers, you know, like Trae Young typically does. Like, that's part of the issue with Trae. But I think he can develop there alongside a good point guard. I think he really can. I like him in that way. I'm very intrigued to see what he does weight-wise in the weight room, because I think, you know, he's pretty skinny right now. And if he can fill out and get a frame to him and tighten up that handle, like how quick that progression arc is, how quickly he can fix the rotating problem on his jump shot, He reminds me a lot of Nicholas Batum, size-wise, and the way he shoots and loves to shoot over that left shoulder with his right arm. Like, it's very interesting in that way. But, you know, the reason why I say that is one of the first plays of that game you're referencing in Portland, he shot an air ball, a turnaround air ball. And, you know, it was back over that left shoulder, and he just kept over, like, he just over-rotated. Proper footwork and balance on that shot to be able to do that yet. So I'm interested in that growth. But they have another very intriguing draft pick, and that it was Nikola Dirisic. And for him, he had a draft day adventure of being drafted by the Miami Heat and then traded to the Atlanta Hawks, which we're going to talk more about in the Miami Heat part of this broadcast. And Nikola Dirisic, I'll be honest with you, I'm going to put a video in this video, a clip of Nikola Dirisic from Summer League, where he makes a jab step, gets to the middle of the floor, and two-hand hammers on two people. And that was shocking to me. I knew he could play. I knew he had some athleticism to him. And in the Summer League, especially the scrimmages, the physicality got to him a little bit, especially the first day. And man, has he turned that around. I mean, he took a really hard take foul in this game to stop a fast break. Literally, like, body blocked the guy out of bounds. Like, he's playing really physical, something he didn't show in Europe, and he didn't show in the first couple of outings in the NBA Combine scrimmages. So I was pleasantly surprised by Nikola Dirisic. What are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I was actually going to reference that exact play that you are going to put a clip in for, just because, like, there were certain times throughout these, you know, this very abbreviated 32-minute sample that he had. Unfortunately, he broke his foot and won't be reevaluated until November. But there were a couple times where I was just like, all right, like, he's making the right play every single time. But there were also, there's probably, like, maybe two or three instances where I was like, I just want him to be a little bit more aggressive. But then I remind myself, like, oh, yeah, he just, like, nearly put two dudes through the rim against Washington in the Summer League. Like, he's just fine in that way. I love, like, when you look at, like, the statistical, and, like, obviously he didn't light up the box score or anything like that. He only had two assists. I wonder how many potential assists he had that just were misses. Like, probably a dozen, maybe even more than that. Like, I love how, and this was a guy that you and I think you were the one that turned me on to him in this draft, but, like, this was a guy that I know you like pre-draft, a guy that I like late in pre-draft. Like, I just loved watching him with the ball in his hands, and, like, they were putting a lot of, they were giving him a lot of primary ball handling responsibility with Atlanta during the Summer League, at least in the time that he was able to play, and I thought he did a good job with that. Like, he was just, again, like, he knows how to conduct an offense. He knows how to, you know, get guys in the right positions. And he's making the smart passes, making the right passes. And he's making, like, he's a little flashy with his passes sometimes. And sometimes that can bite him. But other times it's like, oh, wow, that's a really good pass for an open three. Or that's a really good pass for an open, like, whatever the case is. And so I liked him in that regard, just how good he was orchestrating that offense and the limited sample that he had. The one thing that I don't like about him, and maybe this just being me being ultra nitpicky, I have no idea where his shot is going half the time. Like, to me, like, his form, his center, but, like, it just was never consistent enough for me in this abbreviated sample. And he only shot, I think, 30% when he was in Europe this last year from deep. Like, to me, his shot was just all over the place. I don't know if that was jitters. I don't know what to attribute that to, but, like, his form, it just, everything was all over the place. And it to me, like, that's my one concern. Like, if he...
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
He's like this pass first guy. Like, he's got really good size for a guard, and he's got, you know, to your point earlier, sneaky good athleticism, I think. What happens when, you know, he become like, what if teams play him as a non-shooter? Then what is it like? What if teams start ducking under screens? What if teams are just leaving him open and stuff like that? Like, how does that compromise the rest of his offense? How does that compromise the rest of his team's offense? Like, what exactly does that do for him as a player? And I just want him to, I want him to be, at least work on that shot a little bit. Maybe I'm just overlooking it too much in a small sample. Maybe it was nerves. Maybe it was, it could be a bunch of different things that I just don't know. But to me, like, his shot was just all over the place. And I was just like watching some of those clips. And I'm just like, oh man, like, he's either hitting, he's complete airballed to the right side of the rim or nearly hitting the side of the backboard on a standstill three. Like, I don't know what to make of that. What are your thoughts on that specifically?
No, that's a great question and a legitimate concern. I think a lot of it is a young player not knowing where to get his shots. Whenever he actually runs set plays, because his form, he does fade away unnecessarily on almost every single one of his jump shots. He shoots a fadeaway jumper.
Right.
That's just how he is. But a lot of that, like I said, in terms of his bad percentages, is not knowing where your shots are going to come from. And not how to get to your spots. But like, good players that know how to get their shots, they set up their moves to get to a specific spot on the floor, then they pull. When you're a young player and you don't have that knowledge, you're just running until you see open space, and when you see open space, and then you're, and that's where I think a lot of his troubles are, because he doesn't have perfect form in terms of balance. And when you're fading away or you're leaning in too far and things like that, not going straight up and down, that's where you start seeing that variance of the right, far, or, you know what I mean? And so once he starts really stopping that fading away stuff, he knows where to get his shots. He's a more improved shooter. I'll give you an example. So in the NBA combine scrimmage, he was responsible for the curl into the strong side corner on inbounds play. And again, not to keep referencing the Miami Heat, but you know they run that play twice a game. And so on that play, he knows where his shot's coming from. He buries that shot every time because he knows the footwork, knows where he's going to get that shot. So I think it'll be fine eventually. How quickly he can fix that is going to be how quickly he can really excel on the court. But to your point, he is actually a better passer than most people realize, and that even I thought, because he can get in the lane with that first step of his, and he does a lot of it at a triple. Gets into the lane, draws two, and he sees the side corner really well. And he can make that with his left hand, right hand, or his left hand. He can make that pass to either corner. And so I think he's got a lot of potential there. He is flashy at times, which I love. As long as you're not turning it over, I love that stuff. So I think he's got a bright future.
A couple times it did bite him.
Oh, he turned it over quite a few times in the NBA combine scrimmages. So, you know, you got to be careful with that. As long as you're not turning it over, it's okay. I like having a little fun, a little creativity. But I think his future's bright. I think at number 43, I think he's at number 43. So I'd give their draft overall probably like a C plus, B plus maybe. Because, again, the reason why it's that great is because Thackeray is the number one overall pick. And if you're going to have the number one overall pick, he's got to be a slam dunk difference maker. Is he going to be that? That's the question. So with that, we're going to turn this over to the Miami Heat Hour. And we are going to discuss how these two draft picks line up to stack up to the Miami Heat draft picks. And so the Miami Heat drafted Kelo Ware in the first round. They drafted Pelle Larsen in the second round. And we'll leave it at that. We're not even going to talk about Keshawn Johnson and Isaiah Stevens as the undrafted. Because we all know my point guard bias on this channel. I love point guards. So we're just going to leave it there. So Kelo Ware, here's the other thing. You compare Zachary Risache to Kelo Ware. The potential impact that Kelo Ware could have is actually potentially way higher than Zachary Risache in year one. I'm not talking about their whole career, but in year one, because the Miami Heat have an aging Kevin Love, who's only a year older, only averaged 5 rebounds per game last season, doesn't give you any rim protection at all at his age. He'll take a few charges. He's not going to block any shots. The Miami Heat were next to last in rebounding, total rebounds per game, like 26 total rebounds. So is he going to have that impact? Probably not in the first part of the season. Could he have it by the All-Star break? Who knows? It's all up to Kelo and his motor. Is he going to give effort on every play? Is he going to play hard? Is he going to be stronger? Is he going to set good screens so he doesn't get in foul trouble? Is he going to be able to play above the break on switches? Or is he going to be a strictly drop defender? Those are the questions I have with Kelo. And then in terms of Pelle Larsen, I think he could have the larger playing time out of Kelo Ware in between first and second pick. Pelle has a path. Like if Highsmith gets Highsmith, that's my Pittsburgh Steeler bias. If Haywood Highsmith gets injured or isn't playing well, I could see Pelle stepping in and having a role for how physical he is, how good of a passer he is. He's actually probably one of the better post-entry passers and lob passers we have on the team right away. And that's not saying much because nobody on this team outside of Duncan Robinson could do. And he'll guard you 94 feet and he's super physical and competitive. So I really like Pelle Larsen quite a bit. And I think he's more ready to play than a Nikola Dirosic. Your thoughts?
No, I'm completely with you there. Also, I don't know if I said this the last time I was on here or if I said this on playback or whatever. Why is the NBA, like, I'm just going to go on like a random side tangent, somewhat related to Pelle Larsen and Nikola Dirosic. Why can't they just announce the trade? I mean, I know there's like, you can't officially announce until July 6th or whatever.
Right.
Why does the NBA stick to you can't announce like draft night trades or whatever, like right away?
Because it's like, so goofy.
I've never gotten it. I still don't get it. Maybe I'm just uneducated. Fine, whatever, cool. But like, I don't know. I just think that's like a dumb thing. Also, to that point, why didn't just the Heat take Larsen 43 and Dirosic go 44? Anyway, that's just beside the point. I'm with you with the Larsen. Dirosic, like year one, like I do think that there is a world where Larsen does get more playing time, where I just don't know how much of a role Dirosic will have year one with the Hawks. Like I feel like he's going to be in College Park most of the season. He's going to be with the Skyhawks and their G League team. At least that's just my impression. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe not. I don't know. Just to get like when you lose an entire summer because of an injury, you weren't able to be reevaluated until November. Like, that takes away not half your season. That takes away like close to a quarter of your season, because he could still be out until December if there's any setbacks.
Not to mention conditioning.
Know. Right. Like, it's just, especially it's a foot injury as well. So yeah, who knows, like, the mobility and stuff like that. Like, he's already not super fleet of foot defensively. How is that going to affect him there? So that's just, that's where I'm at with those two in just comparison for year one. I do like the long-term potential of Jurišić a lot. I also like the long-term potential of Perry Larson a lot. The where Ricochet thing is interesting, because I am with you. Like, I do think that where in year one can have that impact. I'm not sure if he will, just because playing big as a rookie, especially when you're not super, like, where's a guy where he's just got to improve his core strength.
Right.
He's got to improve all around. Like, he's going to get, he's 7'1", he's a big guy, but he's just not incredibly strong yet in his lower half. He's not even super strong up top.
Right.
And so I think, like, you get him in that heat strength and conditioning program, obviously they're going to beef him up just like they did Nikola Jovic. And I think over time that's going to work out well for him. I don't know how much of an impact he'll have in year one. Like, I feel like maybe this is me prognosticating this far out. Maybe I'm wrong, but like, I think Love will have like a similar role that he did last year, in the sense that, like, I do think he's going to get the majority of the backup 5 minutes still. And with Ricochet, again, to my earlier point, like, I just don't know what his role will be in year one.
Right.
So maybe there is a role where Ware makes a bigger impact, I guess, from just an impact standpoint, like an impact on winning. Maybe it is more than Ricochet, but I can go either way on that, because I just don't know what the rules for either one of them will be as a rookie. Maybe Ricochet gets 25, 30 minutes a night. Maybe he is this long, lengthy 3-point specialist, 3-and-D specialist, where he's knocking down, you know, 36-37% of his attempts, and he is one of Atlanta's most reliable shooters, as well as one of their most reliable defensive wings. Maybe Ware does, you know, pop as a rookie and makes all rookie first team and puts himself in the running for rookie of the year because he's averaging, I don't know, 15 and 10 per 36 with a couple of blocks or something. Like, just maybe he does do all that stuff, and we're misguiding what his role. I don't know. So I think for those two, it's a little bit up in the air. But I am more confident in Larson being the most impactful rookie, at least between he and Jurišić year one.
Yeah, and that's where I'm at. I'm less confident in Kello Ware's ability to be that kind of impact player, and I'm actually more less confident that the Atlanta Hawks are going to develop Zachary in the proper way.
That's the other issue.
So that leaves Pelle Larson, and I think if he gets in the lineup, you're not going to be able to get him out. I think that guy's dynamite. I think he just brings a lot of intangibles, a lot of grit, makes the right plays, super competitive, will do everything you ask, makes timely cuts, and shoot the ball. I think that's everything the Miami Heat need in a role player, and he's super physical. And so I think he'll fit right in. Time will tell. But I think in all, I had to give you Hawks draft or the Miami Heat draft, I'm probably sticking with the Miami Heat draft. That's my opinion. I like Zachary, but I just don't know where he moves the needle on winning. He might have the better stats, right? Like, between him and Kello Ware, because of sheer volume of minutes, he might have the better stats. But I don't know if, maybe I'm tripping. He's the number one overall pick.
I have a question for you. Would you feel any differently if, like, Atlanta was, like, number four?
Yes.
Like, if Ricochet was, they somehow leaped up not to one, but to number four, and Ricochet was the number four pick. Like,
yeah, I think I would definitely feel differently about that. Yeah.
Okay.
The number one overall pick for me carries so much weight. Like, he's got to be franchise altered. It can't be that you found a good plug and play piece at number one overall. Like, oh yeah, he's going to be a good third or fourth guy right away. He's your franchise. Number one overall pick, right? That's your franchise. Supposed to be. Like, you could have Reed Sheppard.
Maybe not your franchise pick in this kind of draft, but a guy like a building block that you're going to have on your roster for the next 10.
Well, let me ask you, Reed Sheppard, because we're going to get to them, Rockets, we're going to get to them. But Reed Sheppard, to me, is a generational type of talent at point guard.
I wouldn't wholly disagree with that.
Right. So we'll discuss that another point. But that's my point. You need to at least be able to somewhat say this guy is kind of like a generational talent or has potential to be.
Or like your guy, Stephon Castle, who you had.
Don't get me started.
You were one of the, I'll give you credit right now. You were one of the few guys that I saw that had Castle. Like the whole pre-draft, whole everything. And you stuck to your gun with that. And I appreciate
that. That's my guy, man. I think he's going to get Rookie of the Year, too.
Listen, I don't think I'm there. I think Reed gets it, or Edie, but...
So here's why I say...
We'll get to Zach Edie on another... That's going to be the most fun one for me.
Zach Edie. He's really skinny now, man. I don't know if you saw that. He's super skinny.
I know. I couldn't believe it. Like, wow, I was maybe he is like gonna be moving, and he's gonna be somewhat mobile next level.
I'm interested.
I think that could hurt him physically, though, just in the sense of like how big he was and how bruising he was. Maybe he's not as big of a bruiser as he is next level. But again, he's like 8'5". He's the biggest human on planet Earth. So
he's enormous, man. His wingspan is unbelievable. Right. So that'll be an interesting. I can't wait for that segment. But to segue into what's coming up, we're going to do the in alphabetical order. So the Boston Celtics are up next on the hit list. We're going to be having that video out for you on Friday. But before we get out of here, Matt, let them know where they can find you once again and your work.
Everything that I do at MPH_A24_ on Twitter, hothoops.com, a Miami Heat blog that I've been writing for a couple years, Vendetta Sports Media, a sports media site, an up-and-coming sports media site that I've been writing for a while, Mountain West Connection, where I cover the Mountain West men's basketball scene, which is going to be starting up in November. I'm very excited for that season to come. And that's where I also do have my Isaiah Stevens bias. So please go check all that stuff out. We're on Five Reasons. I don't think I mentioned this earlier. Five Reasons Playback. We'll be watching every single Heat game on Playback. Watchplayback.com. So please go check us out there at Five Reasons Sports. I'm all over the place, man. I'm all over the place.
Absolutely. And we appreciate having you on. We're going to try to make this a regular thing. With Matt Hanifan, as you mentioned, go check him out on all of his sites. For me, I'm Digital Adele, your host here at Hoops Profile. You can find me at Digital Adele on all social media platforms and Five Reasons Sports as a contributor over there as well. But we'd like to get out of here on a good note. We'll see you next time.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
What makes a great pair of glasses? At Warby Parker, it's all the invisible extras without the extra cost. Their designer quality frames start at $95, including prescription lenses, plus scratch-resistant, smudge-resistant, and anti-reflective coatings, and UV protection, and free adjustments for life. To find your next pair of glasses, sunglasses, or contact lenses, or to find the Warby Parker store nearest you, head over to warbyparker.com. That's warbyparker.com.